Welcome to The Sower, a podcast of the Ciceronian Society. To learn more about us and our upcoming annual conference to be held March 13th to 15th, 2025 in Harrisonburg, Virginia, visit ciceroniansociety.org. The proposal's deadline is September 2nd, 2024. I'm Christopher Annadale, and this is another episode focused on the theme of place. On this episode of The Sower, our place is Pikeville, Kentucky, and here to tell us about Pikeville is Tyler Sick. Jeffrey Tyler Sick is an assistant professor of politics and the founding director of the Center for Public Service and Outreach at the University of Pikeville in his hometown. Tyler, welcome to The Sower.
Thank you so much for having me.
So tell us a bit about Pikeville, Kentucky. It's in Appalachia, and it is also your hometown. You have roots going back there, and you're a professor at the university. What should we know?
So Pikeville, its economy, it's built on a small river. It was originally founded as a lumber town because they could float the lumber down the river. In the spring and the summer, the river wasn't accessible in the winter. And then eventually, after the timber industry moved out, it became sort of the hub for the local coal industry, which for a very long time was the predominant industry in much of Appalachia, certainly central Appalachia, where Pikeville is. As the coal industry has faded, though, it's become increasingly a university town, like the university I work at, and something of a hospital town. I don't know if that's even a thing, but we do have a very large hospital that employs many people in the county. And it remains in some ways sort of one of the cultural centers for this region of eastern Kentucky. It's the largest town. And when I say largest, I mean it's got 7,000 people. So it's not huge, but largest in the region of the state. It serves as a real hub for a lot of conferences and events. And I grew up about a mile outside of, about 2 or 3 miles outside of town in the county. And what we call Hollers, which is a hollow in between two mountains. And it's just a wonderful place to live. And I've been very fortunate to be able to return back after my graduate education to live here.
Now, I know enough about Kentucky to ask what county is it in? I've heard, you know, Kentucky's got a lot of counties. Whenever Kentuckians meet, the first question is, what county are you from?
We have about 180 counties, I think. Don't quote me on the exact number. But yeah, we almost always identify by our county rather than by our town. And it's in Pike County, named after Zebulon Pike, who was an explorer in the region. There's a funny story about the Kentucky counties, though. A friend of mine who teaches at the university, who's from California, once asked me, she said, where is this county? I said, I have no idea. And she said, don't you know where all the counties are? I said, oh, no, I know where hardly any of the counties are. And she said, I just assumed since you identified by counties instead of town here that people knew where the counties were. I said, no, it's just what we do. I said, do you know where all the towns are in California? She said, no, but that's a smaller region than a county. I said, well, that is fair. But yeah. But it is, for whatever reason, we do identify by the county. And Pike County is actually the largest county in Kentucky. And one of the largest counties east of the Mississippi River, geographically, not population-wise, very large county.
Is it wet or dry? Do you guys still identify in that way?
We do. Pike County, I guess, is moist. The county is wet. Different townships in the county are sometimes dry, which isn't the most effective because it doesn't take very long to get to another township, but it is partly mostly wet at this point.
Right. I suppose I should say for listeners who are not familiar with Kentucky or with the American South that referring to local alcohol control laws, whether sale of alcohol is permitted or not permitted. And that's done on the county and sometimes on the town level in Kentucky and in other states. And it is the other thing I know about Kentuckians is they tend to know if you say you're from Bath County or you're from some other county, people may know just from familiarity with the area, which counties are wet and which are dry. So it's a bit that and local sports is a bit of a cultural factor. Yes. That's kind of unique to Kentucky localities, isn't it?
Yeah, it's in a weird way, which I guess fits perfect with the Ciceronian, a very localist state by disposition, which is wonderful, I think, anyway.
Now, it's not very common that people especially in higher education, will end up working, you know, in a town they grew up just a mile outside of. What's been that life like for you? Is this sort of the something that fell into your lap, or the fulfillment of a long time ambition? A local boy sort of goes away, gets an education, and comes back home.
Yeah, I always wanted to come back to the region. There's one university in the town. There aren't that many colleges in the region. In particular, I would have liked to come back to my hometown, but that seemed too much to hope for in a lot of ways. But it just so happened that the year I was looking for a job, the head of the political science program here, it's a small liberal arts college with some medical universities attached, it was stepped down. And I applied for her job, and I was fortunate enough to get it. So that just fell into my lap. And it's been very interesting, though, moving back home. I'd lived in Charlottesville, Virginia, where I did my PhD for 5 years before that, and lived further upstate, closer to Lexington, for 4 years before that, doing undergrad. And I was just telling a friend of mine recently that one of the weirdest parts about moving back to my hometown is things that I had come to know about myself when I lived in Virginia, little quirks of mine or ways of looking at the world that I just thought of as mine. And then I moved back home, and I suddenly started to realize that they came from where I was from. That they were, maybe they're a little bit me, but they're actually things that I had just picked up growing up in this place, and then carried off into the world, and perhaps became aware of them when I was living somewhere else where they're not so strongly featured.
Are there any specific examples that are shareable? There's little habits of speech or gestures?
Yeah, so definitely some habits of speech, though I've never had a strong accent, a strong Eastern Kentucky accent, which kind of makes me sad, but it is what it is. At some point, I can't fake an accent stronger than the one I have. That seems sort of ludicrous. But certain words I say a little differently. But also, there's a kind of way of looking at the world that I realized after I moved back home and was interacting with lots of people here. A kind of disposition, like I said, Kentucky is a very localist state, a disposition to prefer small things in a lot of ways, a kind of distrust of large government, but also large companies in a political sense, a distrust of large, I guess you could say, religious authorities. Kentucky, I'm Presbyterian, which does have some large authorities, but Kentucky mostly has Baptist churches that aren't even Southern Baptist in this part of the state, because that's too much of an affiliation. And so you can kind of see this distaste for the largeness of anything sort of supersedes the local that I definitely picked up from here. And then also food. I like just plain country food, which that one I sort of knew came from where I was from, but it's very evident now that I like almost every restaurant in the town where that it is very much part of where I came from.
That's funny how sort of the frontier culture, you know, sort of the first wave of settlement over the mountain sort of sticks even a few centuries later.
Yeah. And it, in some ways it's less strong, I think, than it probably used to be. But it's still there. If nothing else, people still like to gripe about large companies. For instance, they go and shop at Walmart, and I love Walmart, but you know, they still gripe about them. Well, there's this kind of tension in both the way people now behave in a very sort of way of the modern world, and then their kind of Appalachian sensibilities.
Is there a kind of insider-outsider dynamic that affects that, or is it more a sort of we're all in this together, and there's people over the mountain or people down in the city that are not quite that may be against us?
I think in Pikeville, anyways, there is a lot less of an insider-outside dynamic. Pikeville being by now being before that a kind of a hub for major corporations, and now being a university town. It's still distinctly Appalachian, but is, I think, by necessity, more okay with outsiders. Most of our faculty are not from the area. It's not surprising to anybody who's in higher ed, that would be very uncommon. And, you know, they're mostly treated fine by the community. But there is a little bit of that sometimes, I think, especially when it comes to the government. There are a distaste for activists or people who come down into the region to try and tell people how to live. I think as long as you come in and you respect people who live here, you're usually fine. It's a or treated as an outsider, I guess, if you act as though you maybe know more than the people who've lived here their whole lives.
Do you feel more of a connection with the staff at the university, which I think tends to be drawn more from local people? I mean, you grew up in that area. You maybe know some of the families and folks, unlike the rest of the faculty who may be recruited from other places in the country.
Yeah, I think I'm very lucky in that, having been from here, I know the area very well and can interact with locals and the staff really easily and really relatably. But then I am also a professor. I went and got my PhD. I teach. I've lived in that world for a long time now. And so I get along very well with faculty. So I'm very lucky in that there is no, I can move between both sides quite easily.
Yeah, it sounds almost like a kind of code switching or sort of one foot in two different cultures that somebody has as an academic and also as a local.
I don't even know if it's code switching so much as there are references that all professors have in common, and I have those references. And there's also references you get when you're a local. I have those references. And I'm not the only faculty from the area. And true Appalachian spirit, a lot of people don't like to move, so they get as close to their home as they can. So there's some people from the area, or at least from the region.
Now you've mentioned the hospital, you mentioned the university. Is tourism a factor in Pikeville, or not very much? Is that another source of sort of outside people coming in and going out?
It is a bit. The city would certainly like it to be more of a factor, I think, and has done work to try and make it more of a factor. But the isolation of the region makes that hard. We're at least 2.5 hours from the nearest airport. There's about 4 airports. They're all about 2.5 hours away. And that makes it, I think, less of a tourist destination than it may be in an ideal world that we would like it to be. It is a very lovely town. There's lots of gorgeous hiking and some good breweries and restaurants and things like that. The sort of things that I'm told tourists really like, but they isolate you. You more or less have to know it's here. So far, maybe that'll change. The city is increasing in population. One of the very, very few in Appalachia that I'm aware of. So maybe if it keeps increasing, it'll get a commercial airport or something to bring in people. Mm-hmm. But
do you think that there's been a lot of talk the past couple of years about population movements, people leaving some states, moving to other states, Florida, Texas, growing in population? Have any Californians or New Yorkers landed in Pikeville, or you think they're mostly giving you the miss?
I don't know where people are moving from, and I've thought about this because I do know the population's going up. I look at the census records, but that said, I don't actually know like this huge population of people who are coming here and of expats from any one particular place. Like I said, I know a lot of people from other places at the university or doctors at the hospital or nurses, but they do come from all over. And maybe that's part of it. It isn't any one particular group. Another thing, though, is I think because the economy is coming a bit back to life in Pikeville, maybe not in some of the surrounding counties, people are able to stay. And so you have that kind of increase in population. Because for a while, Pike County, like a lot of areas in Appalachia, was sort of bleeding residents. The younger people would move off, get a degree, and never come home. And that's less true. Mostly it doesn't happen, but that happens everywhere. And it's less true than it was 10 or 15 years ago.
Yeah, I hadn't thought about that, right? That, of course, yeah, if the economy improves, then you hold on to more of your young people, or you have people like you who are able to go away and actually come back and live, you know, and work a professional job in the place they grew up instead of having to stay away. Tell me a little bit about the University of Pikeville then. Is it a state university? Has it sort of changed its character and grown rapidly in the past decades or since you were a kid?
It has changed rapidly. It's a small, it was founded back in the late 19th century by the Presbyterian Church in the city to try and bring greater education to the Appalachian region, which is a pretty common story for most colleges, universities in Appalachia. Maybe not always founded by the Presbyterian Church, but founded by some group for that purpose. And it remained a pretty small college until about 20 or 30 years ago. It had about 300 students and about 30, 40 faculty. So it's really tiny. And then over the course of the last 20 or 30 years, there's been a series of visionary presidents who really boosted enrollment to try and make the university. So for a long time, it was basically just the college for Pike County and maybe a couple of counties around it, trying to make it a larger liberal arts college for the whole region. With some success, we now have almost 2,000 undergraduates. And then also co-founded two and soon to be three medical colleges to try and serve serious needs in the region in that way, because Appalachia has a serious healthcare problem. So trying to train medical doctors, optometrists, and then soon dental students. And so the university, I would say, has always been driven by kind of a mission of service to the region and to rural America more broadly. A lot of our medical students come from all over the country. But they come from rural areas. They want to learn medicine in a rural area and then return to their rural home. And so that's kind of the mission of the university. Still maintains that mission. And we're in a great place in that because we're growing, because we have financial stability, we're able to create exciting new programs at the undergraduate level and try to really transform from that small 300-person college into a serious liberal arts university.
Great. That's great to hear about, especially in a time when you hear about colleges in distress or places that are maybe only now attempting some of the growth that your college seems to have already begun some time ago.
Yeah, we were very lucky in our leadership in that regard, I think. We were able to kind of see the bigger picture.
Now, one of these programs, I suppose, is this Center for Public Service and Outreach. Is that's a program which you had a role in beginning? What's that like?
So it's very, very new. As of the moment of this being recorded in May, it will not have officially launched until sometime in the summer. But the idea of the Center for Public Service and Outreach is to Appalachia is a region that is struggling from any number of problems, but it's one of the, we think here at the University of Pike, one of the best places in the world to live with a welcoming, homey culture and just physical geographic beauty everywhere you look. Appalachia can only really sort of thrive and reach its true potential if young people are able to lead and to serve and return to their region. And so the Center for Public Service and Outreach is really dedicated to trying to bring sort of the future leaders of the Appalachian region to the University of Pikeville and equip them with the tools. I don't like the term tools makes it sound a little utilitarian, but with the ability to serve their region and their home. And even if they decide to move outside of Appalachia to be of service in some way to their local community. Partly do that through outreach to the community, hence the outreach part.
It's very interesting. I've wondered sometimes myself about the future of Appalachia. Like, what will this require? A complete economic transformation? Is there, is there still coal in the hills? Is there something that would replace that to stop the drain of the youth, especially people who are leaving and not perhaps even for selfish reasons, but being told by their parents, you have to get out, you have to go with this opportunity. What do you see being the future of your part of Appalachia, say 10 or 20 years from now?
Yeah. I mean, I think every place needs its, I mean, I think for the region to really sort of revive and thrive, it's going to take a plethora of efforts. Pikeville is a real success story, and that it's doing quite well. I was just at a policy summit hosted by the American Enterprise Institute, and they had this interesting graphic of all the commuter zones in Kentucky, and what percentage of people from those regions who were born into the bottom 20% income bracket had risen to the top 4% income bracket. And the Pike County, roughly that commuter zone, was one of the very few who was in a good place in the state, really, but particularly in Appalachia. So Pikeville's kind of a success story, but what has made Pikeville successful is a plethora of things. They have a university, they have a hospital, they have a very vibrant chamber of commerce that is good at bringing small businesses into the area, small businesses that nonetheless employ a number of people. And so it takes a plethora of these things, and different towns are going to have to try different things. Not everywhere can have a university and a big hospital, but everywhere can have good businesses and different things. I also think that sometimes I'm a skeptic of technology, but I do think remote work could be a positive good for Appalachia. if you have good internet, which is not a guarantee in Appalachia, and you know, you're an ambitious person who has a good degree, you could work remotely some city job and live in your hometown, or part-time live in your hometown, and it would be absolutely doable. And so that could be a real boon to the region. But in some ways, I don't know the answer. I think that's the, kind of the point of the Center for Public Service, to try and train people who can come up with their own answers, and try, and we do that through, or we will be doing that through the ways you always train good leaders, through reading great books, through getting them involved in their community, through teaching them an appreciation of their culture. And then it's kind of up to them to go out and do, we hope, do great things in the world with those things that we give them.
Do you think the leading factor in revival in Appalachia, let's assume that something good is in the future, do you suppose it's going to come from people being able to, people in places being able to compete effectively on the sort of market for things like businesses and residents and people coming and say, hey, look, Pikeville's a great place to be. This region's a great place to be. It has things that you want, things that you, it's worth investing in and coming to. There's that. There's a sort of economic factor. And then there's the sort of cultural factor, the roots, something of what you have and what people might come looking for, thinking, I want to settle in Pikeville. I want to be from Pikeville. I want my kids to be from Appalachia, from this region. I want them to become Kentuckians, which seems to have a different sort of origin. Plainly, you're going to have these two things working in tandem, right? Sort of cultural identity, rootedness, and attachment to place. And then also, it's a desirable place. It sort of meets a kind of market demand that exists, that's out there. How do you see those two factors weighing in the future, more or less strongly?
Yeah, I mean, I think they're both pretty important. I mean, I don't like to do things just because they make good business sense. But at the end of the day, you need jobs for people to live in a place. And that's just the world we live in. So living in a world where you can bring more jobs to a region, we've in the last couple of decades seen a tremendous concentration of economic power in a couple of urban centers throughout the country. And even Pikeville, I think, is somewhat benefiting from that model as it becomes the urban center for its particular region. Kind of to the detriment of some of the other towns in the area, maybe. So we do have to fix that and try to have an economy that maybe can once again be a little more spread out. But part of bringing an economy to a place is having people who can work in the economy, having educated people who can work in the economy. And there, I do think the rootedness of Appalachia could be a tremendous selling point. It is a region that remains broadly pretty rooted. It's also pretty cheap to live in from another business perspective. And I think we do live in a kind of rootless culture. And I think increasingly young people as well as older people feel left out and feel left behind by the lack of roots that exist in modern society. And Appalachia can offer a real place for them to live and put down roots. And that their children can grow up in a rooted community. And I think it's hard because when you do that, you'll probably never be the rooted one, because right. You will still be the new person having grown up somewhere else, but your children will be rooted. And I really do think that's just the difference. Did you grow up in this place? Do you have the point of, did you go to high school with a bunch of people who still live here? Do you have the point of reference? And you would if you did that. And I think that is another selling point. I think it's maybe a selling point we don't emphasize enough in Appalachia.
Yeah, it's interesting, of course, because roots are the one thing you can't buy, but you might make a sacrifice to try to get them for your children. And this is sort of relying upon your children and perhaps your grandchildren to take advantage of what you're trying to give to them. Now, you told me before we started the episode that your roots in Pike County go back pretty far, your family roots. So what's that part of your story?
Yeah, so I discovered I was doing genealogy for fun. I had a 1 month subscription to ancestry.com for free, so it wasn't. I'm not a serious genealogist, but I was researching, and discovered that my seventh great grandfather Jacob Sick, or Jakob, I'm not really sure, immigrated from somewhere in Germany, to the Pike County region, either in the 1790s or the early 1800s. He was here by the time he died in the 1820s, but seemed to have been here before, and several of his children were born here. So we can date it to the late 18th, early 19th century, our arrival in the region. And one of the things I didn't notice when I first moved here, but you know, as I'm here and you crack open a history book on the area, you will occasionally come across a random Sick. And it's not a common last name in the United States. It's not even a tremendously common last name here. And so I'm probably related to them in some fashion. And that's kind of fun, too, to return. And we've mostly lived on the same hollow in Pike County for at least the last 120 years or so.
Wow. That is an experience I think most people don't have nowadays, is you know, being able to walk on the land that your seventh great grandfather walked on and lived in, or even I know holler culture in Kentucky may maintain some of that, but is that emotionally important to you in terms of who you are now?
I think it is. Yeah. I was just talking before I moved here, and I don't live on that holler right now. I have an apartment in town, but I'm new to the area and housing. One thing about being in a growing town is the housing prices go up. The downside of that. But I would like to move back to it. And I was telling my advisor just before I moved here from Charlottesville a couple of years ago, I said, you know, there's no rational reason why I should want to live on the same holler that my grandfather and great-grandfather lived on. I can't think of any reason in my brain why that should be. I said, but there is an emotional, sentimental reason. That there's just something nice about that, to be rooted in that place. That's where the Sicks live, it's where the Sicks belong. I mean, this is sort of how my soul feels about it, I guess. And that is very much a thing. And when I do buy a house, that's where I would like it to be, even though the holler has undoubtedly, it's changed in my lifetime and has undoubtedly changed in my since my great-grandfather's lifetime.
One of the things that doesn't change, of course, or that changes very slowly and very little are the mountains. I sometimes look at the mountain, yes. You know, near where I live, the very, very small one, certainly by most standards. But I think, you know, this is the same mountain that troops were looking at as they marched up and back from Gettysburg for the Battle of Gettysburg, you know, 150 years ago. And, you know, the mountain will be here, you know, long after I'm gone and the memory of me is gone. Is you think there's a kind of feel of the land that's part of the characteristic of Eastern Kentucky as well?
I do. I think the mountains maybe they shape the region in interesting ways. They shape it economically. I teach at a very rural campus, but it is an urban campus. And the fact that there's not very much flat land, so we have a lot of tall buildings, and they're right on the street, most of them. It was a very odd feature of a campus that's 2.5 hours from an airport and not in a major metropolitan area. So it affects it in that sense. But there's a deeper sense, too, in which I think the closeness of the mountains, growing up in between the mountains, contributes to that kind of localist mindset. And there's also, though, a tragic element to Appalachian culture. I don't want to mean that in the sense that people in Appalachia are very sad, but like if you listen to bluegrass music, yeah. A lot of it is about very, very depressing topics. And then it's usually sung in a very happy way, though. And this is the interesting thing about Appalachian culture, is it is a culture obsessed with tragedy and with bad things happening, but somehow manages to have a mostly positive outlook on life. And that's a feature of the mountains, too, in a way. When you live in a mountainous area, you either live on the mountain or you live in the valleys. And the valleys flood a lot. And so you're subject to the elements. So less now than maybe 150 years ago, but still now we have pretty severe flooding in the valleys. And we all know the valleys that flood more than others, and the ones that don't flood are better property values, so on and so forth. And so it shapes the economy again. And so I think it tremendous influence of the mountains on the area. And like I say, that localism, that because the mountains are close together and we live close together. And it's not like you stand outside your yard and you look across some bright horizon that stretches as far as the eye can see. You look at a forested mountain. And so everything feels intimate and close in a way that I think contributes to that distrust of large things coming in and changing the way things are.
Yeah, that's a great insight. I like that. I was just thinking about the way in which people who live near Lake Michigan have a certain kind of ethos that is natural to the culture of that place, dominated as it is by that body of water, or people from the Rocky Mountains, people from Alaska. There really is a kind of natural culture that fits the land and other kinds that don't.
There is, yeah. I was just teaching Wendell Berry to some of my students before we let out for the summer. And one of the things I asked him, he was talking about where the geography shapes them. And I said, how do you think the geography, and most of my students were from Appalachia, not all of them, but most of them. I said, how do you think your geography shaped you and where you've grown up? In your life. And they had a lot of interesting insights, some of which, and so I should say, some of my answers I've cribbed from my students, that is an important part, I think, of place is geography, which I think we forget about sometimes. I think we often think about religion or economy and so on, but the geography is tremendously important.
It feels almost like a factor almost comparable to biology. You know, it is the shape of the horizon as you look at it. It's just one of these things that you have to come to terms with. You have to deal with. You're not going to change it. And it's always going to be there.
That's right. You know, if I didn't like the economy of Appalachia, there's nothing I as an individual, you know, I could advocate changing it. If I didn't like the mountains, I mean, leveling the mountains is a task. Not to say we haven't blown them up to build roads and stuff here and now and then, but that's different. That just completely eradicated. You have to move. And even then, you would still have grown up with them.
It certainly is a kind of hard limit to the market, the functioning of markets, right? You can buy a place in Kentucky, or you can leave Kentucky, but you can't buy Kentucky and change the mountain.
Yes. Yeah, that's right. Yeah. So there's a limit to what the economy, to markets, to human will can do to a place and to a people.
That's good. That seems also interesting to me as well. Some particular places may be more loaded than in the sense of the limitations and the requirements they impose on human individuals and cultures that are settling them.
Yeah, that's almost certainly true, probably. I mean, I think of some places that are very, very flat. It's a lot easier to build, but even that openness probably changes things. And the sort of natural disasters that come with flat land, tornadoes and the like. Yeah.
I know when I lived in Atlanta, it used to be observed that Atlanta grew in the sort of sprawling directions it did because there were no natural barriers in northern Georgia. You could get, there's no real wide rivers or mountains that would impede you. So the economic growth took a certain shape that it would certainly have taken differently with a different physical geography.
Yeah, that does make sense. Yeah,
I think this is a good place for us to finish, thinking about the role of place, the role of physical geography in setting our sense of place, giving us both the kind of resources and the limits to the kind of culture that we live within it. We've been talking about the town of Pikeville, Kentucky, with Professor Tyler Sick of the University of Pikeville. Tyler, thanks so much for being on the Sower today.
Thank you. It's been my pleasure. Always happy to talk about my home.
If you enjoyed this episode of The Sower, please share it with a friend and rate us 5 stars. Go to our website, ciceroniansociety.org, for more information about our activities and mission.